The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on May 1st, 1985 at New Talavan Farm in Carriere, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 6th Canto, Chapter 12, Texts 17 to 19.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Sato Jaya Mudiyajet. Mukha Kradoti Vachalam. Angulam Gayate Girim Yatripatamaham Vande Sri Guru Vinatarinam. Yat Kripatamaham Vande Paramananda Madhavam. Sri Chaitanya. Prana, Glaho, Ayam, Samara, Ishu, Akshaha, Vahana, Asana, Atra, Na, Jayate, Amushya, Jaya, Amushya, Parajaya, Prana Glaho Yang Samara, Ishvaksho Vahanasana, Atra Nagyayate Mushya, Jayo Mushya Parajaya, Pranaglaho Yang Samara, Ishvaksho Vahanasana, Atra Nagyayate Mushya, Jayo Mushya Parajaya.
O my enemy,
O my enemy,
consider this battle.
Consider this battle
a gambling match,
in
which our lives,
are the stakes,
the arrows are the dice,
and the animals,
acting as carriers,
are the game board.
No one can understand
who will be defeated,
and who will be victorious. It all depends on providence. Oh, my enemy, consider this battle a gambling match in which our lives are the stakes. The arrows are the dice, and the animals acting as carriers are the game board. No one can understand who will be defeated and who will be victorious. It all depends on providence. Shri Sukha Uvacha Indra Vitra Vacha Sutva Gatali Kam Upa Apujayat Grihita Vraja Prahasans Tam Aha Gatavismaya. Shri Sukha Uvacha Indra Vitra Vacha Sutva Gatali Kam Apujayat Grihida Vacha Prahasans Tam Aha Gatavismaya. translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Sukadev Goswami said, hearing the straightforward instructive words of Vritrasura, King Indra praised him and again took the thunderbolt in his hand. Without bewilderment or duplicity, he then smiled and spoke to Vritrasura as follows. Sukadev Goswami said,
hearing the straightforward instructive words
of Vritrasura,
King Indra praised him
and again took the thunderbolt
in his hand
without bewilderment or duplicity.
He then smiled
and spoke to Vritrasura as follows. Report by Srila Prabhupada. King Indra, the greatest of the demigods, was astonished to hear the instructions of Vritrasura, who was supposed to be a demon. He was struck with wonder that a demon could speak so intelligently. Then he remembered great devotees like Prahlada Maharaja and Bali Maharaja, who had been born in the families of demons. And thus he came to his senses. Even so-called demons sometimes have exalted devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore Indra smiled reassuringly at Vritrasura. Indra uvacha, aho dānava-siddhosi, yasyate motiridrishi, bhakta sarvātmanātmānam,
suhidam
jagarīśvaram.
Translation
by Śrīla Prabhupāda. Indra said, O great demon, I see by your discrimination and endurance in devotional service, despite your dangerous position, that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul and friend of everyone. Translation. Indra said,
O great demon,
I see by your discrimination, and endurance in devotional service,
despite your dangerous position,
that you are a perfect devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
the Supersoul and friend of everyone.
Purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 6:22, Yangalabdva cha parangalabham manyate nadhikam tata yasmin stito nadhukena guru nabi vichalyate.
Translation.
Established in Krishna consciousness, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. End of translation. An unalloyed devotee is never disturbed by any kind of trying circumstance. Indra was surprised to see that Vritrasura, undisturbed, was fixed in devotional service to the Lord, for such a mentality is impossible for a demon. However, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, anyone can become an exalted devotee. Striyo vaishyas tatha sudras tepi yanti puram gati. An unalloyed devotee is sure to return home, back to Godhead. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta translation and purports of the Srimad Bhagavatam text
17, 18, and 19 of chapter 12, canto 6, in the chapter entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death, are fighting against each other. Actually, Vritrasura, Chitraketu, who has been cursed to become a demon, he's a great devotee, reincarnated or transmigrated into this bird. So his purpose was he had to fight with Indra. Indra is also a devotee. As the king of the demigods, he has to maintain certain kshatriya codes, and that also calls for sometimes fighting with demons. In spite of both being a devotee, there's a bit of a difference. It's amazing how Indra, he had become disheartened. He practically admitted defeat. And Vritrasura then started to preach to him how we should see everything to be being performed by the will of the Supreme, no matter how bad or sure defeat might appear. No one is guaranteed victory, no one's guaranteed defeat in this material world. Only one always guaranteed victory is Krishna himself, the Lord Vishnu. Different expansions. Otherwise, the conditioned soul can always be defeated or can be victorious. There's no surety of it. But the one who's giving victory and defeat is the Lord. So this way he encouraged him. Just pick up your thunderbolt and start fighting again. Don't be a slouch. And Indra was amazed to hear all these preachings from a so-called demon. Of course, the difference is Indra is a Swakam devotee. There are two types of devotees, Swakam and Akam. Those who have got some desire are called Swakam. Kam means lust or desire. Sa means with. A means no. Akam means no desire or desireless devotee. So, demigods are generally Swakam devotees. Those devotees who have got some desire for material comfort, for material opulences, for material enjoyments, but who are devotees of the Lord, they take birth in the heavenly planets as demigods or as different on the planets of the demigods, and thus they can enjoy very comfortable material life. Of course, material life means that there's always some problems. So even though Indra is enjoying all the comforts of being the king of heaven, he has to also fight with such dangerous, terrible demons as Vritrasura, who could easily kill one with their immense prowess. So, that is one kind of devotee. Other type of devotee is who has got no desire but to serve the Lord. So, although Vritrasura got his arm cut off, which should normally be a bit of a, you could say it'd be a bit disheartening if you're fighting a battle and one of your arms gets cut off. In spite of that, he didn't lose any heart, but he kept on fighting. In fact, He fought so furiously that he caused Indra to drop his thunderbolt. That's what made him morose. He said, if you just knock the thunderbolt off my hand, just stop fighting then. It was like a big embarrassment for him. And Vitrasura said that, don't get morose. There's no guarantee who's going to win or who's going to lose. It's all up to Krishna. Just take it up and start fighting again. Like they started preaching so many examples. So when Indra congratulated him that I can see you're actually a great devotee. Otherwise, how can a demon be glorifying how Krishna is the ultimate controller? He's the supreme decider of who's the winner, who's the loser, so on and so forth. So in this way, in the battlefield, there were some Krishna katha going on. And all Indra was ready to fight. And although he was fighting, he was also able to recognize that this is a devotee. And so he was also praising that demon for his devotion to Krishna. So the devotee, the pure Vaishnavas, they're not envious of the Sakam devotees or the demigods. Even though some foolish individuals worship the demigods thinking them to be the Supreme Lord. That is explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Santava Tu Phalam Teshang Tapavat Alpamedasham. That is, an action performed by those having a limited intelligence or small intelligence. Alpamedasham. Alpa means very small, medasam means intelligence. So, the devotees of Vishnu can understand that this is foolish if they think that these demigods are supreme. The demigods themselves are always looking to the Lord Krishna for their mercy, for benedictions. You see, the devotees, they don't envy, they understand that these demigods are also devotees, but they're devotees who have got some desires. Therefore, they had to take birth in the material world. Any birth in the material world means in one's conditioned soul, of course, except for those who only come to serve the Lord or to associate in His pastimes. But generally, any birth in the material world means in one's conditioned soul. Whether you're a demigod, whether you're human, or whether you're an animal, or a demon. So it's simply different modes under which one is being governed. So the demigods are normally under the mode of goodness, and the demons are under the mode of passion or ignorance. But in this case, Vritrasura is under the mode of pure goodness because he's a pure devotee. So even goodness can become bewildered sometimes by passion or ignorance. But pure goodness is achuta, it's unfailable. So in spite of so much difficulty, Vritrasura was still determined. Indra became hatasha. He became hopeless at one point. So, therefore, all of the great acharyas, they tell us, they instruct us that we should simply take shelter of the Lord in causeless devotional service, in pure devotional service. Bhajahure manna Shri Nanda Nandana Avaya Charanara Vindane. Just worship Krishna, the son of Shri Nanda Maharaj, and everything you'll become totally fearless. Avaya Charanara Vindane. Avaya means fearless. So, therefore, devotee is not hopeless under any circumstance. Whether there's defeat or whether there's success or victory in some material conflict, devotee is determined to go on with devotional service. Right? The materialist, because he wants some kind of material result, if he doesn't get the result, they become disenchanted, they become unmotivated for for working any further. But the devotee is not working for some result. Working for the satisfaction of Krishna. Trying to get a result to offer to Krishna. But whether the result comes or not, the devotee is determined to go on serving Krishna. Result is just that, it's like a game. You're trying to play it, you're using it as a means to try to refine the devotional enthusiasm. Trying to get the result for Krishna. If there's no result, try again better the next time. But the actual objective is to go on performing devotional service. Therefore, the devotee is never bewildered or never loses the determination to serve those who are the unalloyed devotees. Those devotees who are very attached to either getting liberation or some material facility, if they don't get some result, they start thinking that why should I continue in my devotional service? You can all take lessons. Vritrasura. How even in spite of so many difficulties, even though he had his arm cut off, that just made him more determined. He was going to go down, and as a result, of course, he always was keeping Krishna fixed up in his heart. He was always working in the consciousness as an instrument of Krishna. He could see any defeat or failure or any success or victory as simply being given by the Lord. He didn't see anything independent of the Lord. Just as Lord Chaitanya said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the devotee, wherever he looks, he sees Krishna. Doesn't see anything else but Krishna. Just like example was given, that a foolish person thinks that, oh, person is born as a son or daughter of this particular mother and father, they grow for some time, and then in due course, they're devoured, and they die. They are devoured by the material energy. They die in this way. According to their karmas, everything's going on. Even Vritrasura said that, no, actually, mother and father, that person, all these changes are going on ultimately by the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that everyone is acting as an instrument towards His will. One should see that actually He's bringing people and He's also destroying people. In this way, we should remain fixed up in Krishna consciousness, seeing Krishna's hand in everything and everywhere. So, all these are very important instructions. Because naturally, there are so many obstacles which come up. I remember that there was so many questions coming up. What will be the future? What is going to happen? In some places. And then the devotees persevered. They continued on with their devotional service. Then also by Krishna's mercy, they could see that so many things started to expand. So, one should take this to be the mercy of the Lord and should remain determined to continue on with devotional service. If one becomes only habituated that if I get a good result, I'll do my service enthusiastically. If I don't get a good result, then I'm not going to do my service at all. Then one's service becomes very sporadic. If there's no guarantee in the material world what type of result a person is going to get for any given service. Sometimes one may give their best effort and there's a different result. Another time, even without hardly trying, one may get a very good result. So, It's very difficult to always see what is the plan of the Lord. The devotee goes on with devotional service, just seeing the hand of the Lord acting everywhere. For example, this morning I wanted to, I've been trying to finish up the ISKCON, edit the ISKCON handbook, but somehow one of the disks carriers, the one that contains all my computer disks for my translation and writing work, that was left in New Orleans. So I couldn't do any work on that book this morning. So then I was thinking, well, after the japa period, what can I write? So I thought, let me finish the Glories of Navadvip Dham chapter that I was working on, dictate on that then on the tape. And so then Yogendra Prabhu was coming and saying that it was time to come for the darshan and everything. So I just had one paragraph left to finish in the chapter. So I thought, well, let me just finish and then I'll go. So then, just the last paragraph, it was describing the tours of Lord Nityananda with Lord Jiva Goswami when he was going throughout the Navadvip Dham. After Jiva Goswami left his birthplace, he went to Navadvip Dham and met with Lord Nityananda, who took him around and explained the inner meaning of Navadvip Dham. This was also revealed by Srila Prabhupada in one of the purports, I think we just read a couple of days ago. Prabhupada mentioned this, how Jiva Goswami went to Navadvip and was taken by Nityananda Prabhu. So then, the sixth chapter is talking about Srimantadvip, which is the chapter where the Jagannath Temple is situated in Mayapur. The history goes that many years ago, many thousands of years ago, there was a demon called Raktabahu, and the Danavas, the daityos, they were like forest people who were taking care of Lord Jagannath. They took Lord Jagannath here to Navadvip and kept him there while the demon was creating so many disturbances, until that demon was killed by one pious king. So then that part of Navadvip is known as not different from Jagannath Puri, and it's a very sacred place. The project here had donated a little Lakshmi, which was given for development of that new temple. Now there's a new temple which has been constructed there. So it was telling how Lord Nityananda came and explained all these glories of that part of Navadvip Dham, and then how he went to the house of Kolavecha Sridhar, showed where Lord Chaitanya had rested after the big meeting with the Chankaji, with the hundreds of thousands of people. And then Kolavecha Sridhar came out and he greeted Lord Nityananda and Jiva Goswami and worshipped Lord Nityananda and arranged for a nice prasadam feast for him. And then Lord Nityananda taken rest on a cot, and then Sridhar, Kolavecha Sridhar, and his family members were massaging Lord Nityananda's lotus feet. And Lord Nityananda was taking them around and described, of course Nityananda knows firsthand, because, I'll explain why. He started explaining about this one place called the Mayamara, Moya Mari Tirtha. Mayamari Tirtha is a place where there was a demon called the Moyasur. The Moya Asur was also creating so many disturbances for the Brahmanas, sometimes even apparently killing the Brahmanas or something like that. So in Dwarpa Yuga, when Lord Balaram, he was visiting all the holy places, he also came to Navadvip Dham, and one night he took rest there. So then all the Brahmanas approached him and requested him to save them from this Moyasur. So then Balaram became very angry to hear how some demon was creating disturbance for the Brahmanas. With a great force, he just ran after that demon and caught up with him. So then there was a huge battle where they fought the demon and Balaram. So finally, of course, in the end, Balaram prevailed and the demon was dispatched out of this world. So that place where that demon was delivered is known as the Maya Madi Tirtha, or the holy, the place where the Maya Asur was delivered. So all these things are being explained by Lord Nityananda and Srivash Thakur to Sri Jiva Goswami. So then, after that, I said this is all from the Puranas. That then it said that the confidential meaning of this Mayamari Tirtha, this place which is just next to the Jagannath Temple in Mayapur, is that this is not different from the Talabon of Rajadam of Krishna's pastimes. So then I was reading that and I said, how fortunate, by Krishna's arrangement, how many times I read the Navadvip Mahatma, Glories of Navadvip Dham, but that somehow it never registered. Here I'm sitting in New Talabon, and I wouldn't ordinarily have translated that particular work right now, but by Krishna's arrangement it happened. Even though there were so many other failures this, that in the morning, but by Krishna's arrangement, now we're able to realize sitting here in New Talabon, it has more of a significance, and how that part of Navadvip Dham, next to the Jagannath Temple, is not different from Talabon of Vrindavan. And here I'm sitting in New Talabon, blessed by Prabhupada. So I took that to be a very great sign by Lord Krishna, and he revealed that connection. Somehow, the devotees from New Talabon who go to the Jagannath Temple, they always like that. And it was the only specific project that this temple had contributed for by name, was just that area. So I thought it was quite significant that devotees here would also be glad to hear. Today in this Bhagavatam Shloka, we see that how we should see anything that happens as Krishna's mercy. We should just go on with our service and depend on Krishna. We see how Krishna acts in certain sublime ways. So, of course, for the devotees, they see these things always at Krishna's hand. For some demon or non-devotee, they say, well, it's always coincidence or just this, that. They have their own, they don't see anything, they don't want to admit anything as being connected with Krishna. So Krishna said, Jayjata mang prapadyante tangsataiva bhajamiham. As you approach him, so he reciprocates. So those demons who just say, well, Krishna doesn't exist, for them he doesn't exist. But for the devotees who are seeing Krishna everywhere, for them, Krishna is everywhere, always helping them, always reminding them of different transcendental, always revealing more mysteries of Krishna consciousness. Also took it that here, because Srila Prabhupada visited the New Talabon project, and because it was just a reminder how this naming, when Prabhupada gives the name New Talabon, surely that has so many spiritual significances. We know that of the 12 bones or village or forest of Vrindavan, Talabon was one of the favorite places where Krishna and Balaram would take the cows, and especially they like to eat the tala fruit. Tala fruit means it's a type of looks like a coconut. The black in color on the outside. And in India you find that there's two ways people take tal fruit. Tal fruit. Tal is when it's green, when it's not ripe. That time you cut up the tal and inside you find two or three fruits which are just like jello. It's a little fruit. Then all the sandesh, those kind of big sandesh with one side flat and they go round, that's made in the shape of a tal fruit. You get those forms all the time. The people all over it can make those molds, but they don't know what it is. That happens, I think it's a sandesh rupa or something. But that's the tal fruit shape. And the unusual thing about the tal fruit is that in the center of it there's some pocket of juice, and outside is kind of like a semi-hard, soft jello. So you bite into it, and then the juice squirts out all over your chin. The kids, they always come, it's quite inexpensive, so everyone can get it. It's only about 5 paisa a piece to get a piece of tal fruit. So all the children always come up and they want to take the unripe tal fruit. So one time there's one place in Bengal called Chandanagar where they make a type of sandesh which is known as tala sandesh. And the specific, when we went there, we did a preaching program, they gave us one of these sandesh. And they said that all the big village elders were there waiting while we were going to take this sandesh. We didn't know what was the big thing, you know. They're all watching. And then we bit into the sandesh. It was outside very hard, made just in the shape of the tal fruit. We bit into it. And then right from the center there, we didn't know, there was a bunch of juice. Went down our chin. We all started clapping. Said, "This is the secret." Their whole thing was they had perfected making a hard sandesh with a soft inside, with the juice. Just like a tal fruit, and they are very proud of that. It was like their whole town, it was the main thing they were famous for. They could do that. How they did it was the secret they wouldn't reveal. There's a handed down from father to son. Because unless the sandesh was hard, then the liquid inside would make it soggy. So that was outside a little firm, and inside it was like a rasgulla type of juice. So anyway, these are the glories of tal. But one other stage of tal is when it gets ripe. Then the whole tal fruit, not just that seed, that's like a seed in the center, that seed becomes hard. And the whole tal fruit becomes dark in color, and inside becomes yellow, and it has a very strong aromatic smell. That strong aromatic smell was what attracted Krishna and Balaram and Vrindavan to want to go into Talabon. It's a very nice scent, that tal fruit. And what they do is they take the tal fruit and they crush it and get the juice out of it, the scented juice, and they mix that with the pakora batter. And they make special things that are called tal buras, or a type of sweet pakora we made from tal fruit and rice flour and different basin and things. So Krishna and Balaram, they were attracted by that scent, but there was a demon who wouldn't let die. So they had to defeat the demon so they could go into the tala bone. So like that, sometimes the difficulties that have to be overcome, but by Krishna's mercy, gradually all the difficulties are overcome. Or sometimes there are more difficulties at stake. Whatever it is, the devotees are simply determined to go on with their devotional service. So here being in Nutalavon, we can see that Krishna's mercy is there. We're getting so many opportunities to serve Him. And here there are also so many trees, and there are cows, and there are devotees. And if we can try to keep the consciousness fixed on a service attitude to Krishna, everyone trying to please Krishna, that being the only direction or the only goal, then there's never any defeat in any devotee's spiritual life. Even though Vritrasura, he finally was defeated, it seemed, by Indra. Actually, Vritrasura, on the other hand, Vritrasura went back to Godhead. So whether there's apparent defeat or whether there's success, for the devotee it's all success. Of course, the devotee, just as Vritrasura said, even though he knew that ultimately he was going to be defeated physically, but he knew that if he was defeated, he'd go back to Godhead because he was the devotee. And if he wasn't defeated, well, he was victorious, so then you're victorious if he defeated Indra. So nothing to lose. So the devotee has got nothing to lose, everything to gain, if we continue on very enthusiastically in our devotional service. Because the end result is always going to be that we'll go back to Krishna. Even if we're trying for some material facility, trying to do something wonderful in this lifetime for Krishna, if we succeed, well then, very nice, we get that satisfaction of being able to see some very nice devotional service, some nice worship, some nice thing developed for Krishna. And somehow or another, even if we're not successful, well, because we've given our everything for serving Krishna, we go back to Godhead. So where's the loss? Right? The other hand, demons, who are actually demons, those who are not devotees, they work very hard, and if they get something material, then they're always lamenting, fearing, always worrying about losing that. And finally, when they lose it at the time of death, then again, everything is gone. Their fame, their fortune, their life, everything. Again, they just have to take birth in the material world from the zero point. And for their sinful reactions, they may even have to take a hellish birth. So, while living, they can enjoy it. And when they die, they lose everything. So for them, there's victory at no point. Even in victory, they're suffering. Even their victory, for 1 second, they feel elation. Then the next time, they're always trying to just maintain it, because they have no confidence, they have no shelter from Krishna. You can see that the materialist, that their whole life is a hopeless situation. While for the devotee, everything is a success. So the more that one can be fixed up in pure devotional service, especially causeless devotional service, then naturally one becomes fearless. Fearless doesn't mean careless, but it means that one is determined to go on with devotional service irregardless of what happens. Doesn't fear the way that the materialists fear that there's going to be utter destruction. Because ultimately no one can take one's Krishna consciousness away. If we want to, if by our offenses, if by our carelessness we lose Krishna consciousness, that's only our fault. It's not, no one else can come and steal it from us. Unless we somehow or another allow it to happen. If somebody comes and starts gossiping, telling us things about this devotee, this thing, that thing, and then we go out listening and we get implicated in Vaishnava Bharatas, or we start seeing things from a material point of vision, and then a material desire, and then that puts us in a weakened position if we ourselves give up our determination by bad association or otherwise. That's the only cause. But otherwise, some materialist wants to come and steal one's devotional service. Only by our own negligence, by prajalpa, by offenses, by carelessness, by not following the instructions of the spiritual master, we can lose our devotional jewel. But otherwise, if we are very careful not to commit any offenses, we're very careful not to engage in prajalpa, we're very careful to be very determined in our devotional service, we're very responsible for protecting our devotional creeper and for watering it and nurturing it, but nothing outside can destroy that. We just have to keep the guard up spiritually for these spiritual attacks. Otherwise, materially, there's nothing can take it away. See, whether Haridas Thakur was put in jail or wherever he couldn't stop him, wherever he went, he was preaching. It was unsurmountable. So, in that way, we should try to get the blessings from the great devotees so we can remain determined to continue with our devotional service, irregardless of what the material situation is. Trying always, of course, we try, just like Victor Sura, he was trying to win. Similarly, we always try to do something. It's not that we're impersonalists, that, oh, we're not interested in material success or failure, so we know. Interested means we are not dependent upon success or failure for our devotional service. We're going to do service irregardless of what happens. And for that, sometimes Krishna tests us by different tests, by different failures, just to see whether we are determined or whether we're just fair-weather friends. And then, when we are proven that we are simply in devotional service for devotional service's sake, you see, then Krishna knows that if they get success, it'll be less likely to go to their head, that they can maintain their purity, they can maintain their connection with Krishna, with me, so he gives them the mercy. Even Prabhupada had to struggle so hard. The Lilamrita, what he had to endure is practically inconceivable. When a pure devotee has to go through so many troubles, then naturally, someone who's less pure, we have to expect to have so many kind of difficulties come. But by the mercy of the previous acharyas, of Krishna, Radha Radha comes and Nitai go, and naturally we can cross over the bewilderment that these kind of obstacles can create and remain fixed up in Krishna consciousness. So we try, using our full energy, our full intelligence, our cooperation to achieve victory for Krishna. That's our attempt. And in trying to achieve victory, sometimes we lose the battle, we go back to the drawing board, and again we try. But we have nothing else to do but serve the Lord. And so He's given us, here's the opportunity, here's the game plan. So our game or our plan is here, we're trying to build an environment where people can take shelter. We're trying to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. We're trying to protect cows. We're trying to create an attractive environment for bringing in the conditioned souls, showing them an alternative, positive way of living, a more natural way. So, Prabhupada has given us our task, now it's simply us to try cooperatively to achieve success, to be victorious. It's a special mercy to get a devotional service personally from the spiritual master. So, there are so many new projects which have come up all over the world, but this is an original project started with the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, named by Srila Prabhupada. So there's something in the future, there'll be millions of projects, but how many will be personally started by the blessing of Prabhupada? So this is one of those rare holy places in the universe. So everyone is very fortunate. Even now in America, there are so many few farm projects are there. But I don't think that Prabhupada went to all of them. He went to New Vrindavan, Gita Nagari, New Talavan. Didn't go to all of the projects. So this is a very great opportunity that we have to serve a project specifically blessed by Srila Prabhupada. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any questions? No questions? Yes? When the purpose of saving, changing the service is not to increase your devotional service. When the purpose is not to satisfy Guru and Krishna more, then it's Maya. Any other questions?
You were saying earlier in your class that there's some devotees that have material desires, like the demigods, and there's other devotees that have pure devotional service. So, what about devotees in ISKCON? Like, say they have not sinful material desires, but like desires for children or, you know, things like that. Is that considered a material desire? Or is that considered...
Sometimes there are basically material desires which devotees have. If they're able to dovetail those desires in a Krishna conscious way, because it says in the Kali Yuga that you get the result from acting in other ages simply by thinking of something, you get the result. So if someone does the action in such a way that it's a devotional service, just like then one doesn't get any kind of material reaction from that. For instance, basically the desire to have a children in general would be considered a material desire. In some cases such a desire might be inspired by Krishna if he wants to have a great devotee appear in the world, so he inspires those desires. But then if a person, it's hard to distinguish that But there's nothing unnatural about that desire. It's not just like people have desire to eat. Desire to eat is, and that is a material desire. But we have material bodies, so long as you have, you're going to have to desire to eat. But we eat prasadam. So similarly, you have a material body, it's natural to have the desire to have children. Then we try to have Krishna conscious children, and we try to do that according to the system given by the scriptures and by the Shastra, by the spiritual master. So therefore those activities become purified. But just like today is Ekadasi, we don't take any grains, because even eating, we shouldn't be attached to eating for eating's sake. We have to eat, but we should be detached even from eating. So sometimes we fast on sacred days so that we can give our full attention just to chanting and to purely transcendental things. Of course, when we do eat, we eat prasadam, and that's also transcendental because it's Krishna. So these basic things like sleeping, eating, mating, defending, these are things which are part of material life. You can't avoid them. So they have to be done in a Krishna conscious way, so that one's attachment remains fixed in Krishna. Then there are other things which are the embellishments, which are kind of the luxuries. And any of these activities or other luxury, if they go beyond the necessity of devotional service. As it says, sometimes said, everyone heard of the statement, an over-endeavor. If something's an over-endeavor, that means that it's very simple to have one thing. You try very hard to get something. You work so hard to get a little extra comfort. Just like in the material world, sometimes you see people work so hard, day and night. I was just in Hawaii, and they said how people save up for sometimes years together to get their Hawaii vacation. They go to Hawaii, and then sometimes it rains for 1 week straight in Hawaii. Because it's a tropical place, sometimes like if some monsoon comes and it rains. This devotee there had making a preaching center in a 33rd floor of this building. I looked down and it was a very big drop. I said, isn't it dangerous? He said, well, not usually for the devotees, but sometimes when the tourists come here, they save up for so many years. If it's raining for one week or 10 days straight, they get so frustrated that they work so hard for their vacation, it was solid raining, but they just jump out the window. So this, we call it over-endeavor. Actually, real happiness we get from the simple things of Krishna consciousness. We don't have to take some vacation somewhere to become happy. That's kind of the material illusion. Rather, for the devotees, they can get happiness at every step. Sukham kottam abdayam. Purnamita swadhanam pratipadam purnamita swadhanam. Taste the full nectar at every step. But when we think that the only way I can be happy is when I have this material thing or that material thing or this, then we should know that we have to be careful, because if we start focusing too much on those external things for our happiness, we could lose sight of Krishna and this way get wound up in that big endeavor which is known as material quest for material happiness. But if we fix our Krishna consciousness, sometimes naturally some desires come, just like eating or other natural desires are there, and sometimes Krishna arranges in such a way, just like somehow or another you get prasadam. It happens somehow or another, different things happen somehow or another. Sometimes people are doing devotional service and it seems that for their particular situation they're more suited to serve Krishna in the Grihastha ashram. So then Sometimes that, in a natural way, that also develops and people get enter Grihastha Ashram. They have children. Those things naturally also happen. But the point is that then one has to always be very determined to do everything in such a way that Krishna is pleased by them. And as soon as one leaves aside Krishna and just does something for sense gratification without trying to keep Krishna pleased, then one gets very entangled. So of course, entering into Grihastha life or having children is also a kind of a risk. One can get very attached to family and children, and that attachment, if one doesn't keep up very strictly with devotional practices, with devotional service, that attachment can grow beyond what it should be for a devotee. And that could be a cause for taking future births, if one leaves the body in a very attached state. But normally, therefore, in the other sampradayas, like the Mayavadi sampradayas, they say, unless you take sannyas, you can't get liberation. But in our Vaishnava sampradaya, we say, no, grihe tako, bone tako, sadahari bole dako. Even as a grihastha, a person can achieve liberation, even though there are so many opportunities for attachment, if they're very strict about regularly chanting, performing their devotional service, and remaining very firmly in Krishna consciousness. But there is some risk. We should be aware of that. When Lord Chaitanya told the Grihasthas, devotees, he told them, they kept asking him, what is for us? What is the most important thing? He said, the most important thing is to do Sankirtan. And they kept pressing. Again, you know, they kept asking on occasion. Then Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you should asat samga tyago e vaishnava achar Krishna bhakta akasadu stri sangiyar. Stri sangi akasadu Krishna bhakta ar. That he advised them, you have to avoid the association of non-devotees. Then he described who are the non-devotees. Those who are simply women hungers, those who are just after women for sense gratification, and those who are non-devotees. Those are the two types of people that Lord Chaitanya advised staying away from. Those who simply want sense gratification from the opposite sex, and those who are simply after, who are not devotees, who are against devotional service. These two types of people are detrimental. Otherwise, Prabhupada and all the acharyas say that we have to be realistic, and for specific people, different situations of life are more suitable, the grihastha or sannyas. In general, the grihastha situation is more secure for practicing devotional service for this age. And one has to be realistic about the pros and cons of that particular ashram. If one is very careful, go back to Godhead. One has to still be careful. There's nothing that doesn't require care. When you're in a battle, we're in a battle. Until you get back to Godhead, you're in a battle. Even you're sheltered by association of devotees, by the spiritual master, by the temple. You should never become careless and forget that even though we are in this kind of sheltered situation, nonetheless we're still on a battlefield. And Maya is always ready to take advantage if we become weak or careless. So we have to be also the guardian of our devotional jewel and see that whatever desire we may come up, that if it's something which is totally bad, should renounce it, like breaking the principles. And if it's something which is dovetailable, something which we can engage in Krishna service, and we should, if authorized, we should dovetail that in Krishna service. So sometimes a devotee has a desire to have a child, and they ask the spiritual master for permission or for confirming, is this a realistic desire? Is this something which is all right? That happened with a devotee called Chaitanya Das and his wife Padmavati, I think her name was, or Satyavati, maybe Vishnupriya. Her wife was Vishnupriya. Lakshmipriya. She was also Lakshmipriya. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, your desire is inspired by Krishna, because you're going to be the parents of my great devotee Srinivas Acharya. I want you to go back and have this child. And they named their child Srinivas, and he was the great Acharya. So sometimes a desire might be inspired. Doesn't mean that every time it's inspired. So they sometimes it's confirmed. In any case, even if one has a natural desire like that, I think I've explained in depth enough how it has to be dovetailed, how anything we do has to be dovetailed. We have to always be careful. And if we're a little careful, just like Prabhupada said, devotional service is like, of course, in a Ekadasi we don't shave men, but it's as sharp as that razor's edge. We have to be very careful. If we're careless, we cut ourselves. So in this age, whether you're a grihastha, whether you're a brahmachari, whether you're a vanaprasthi or a sannyasi, you have to be careful at all different levels. Till you get back to home, back to God. Then you're in Vaikuntha, there's no anxiety, there's no problem then. Until then, you have to be careful. Hare Krishna. Yes?
Sometimes it appears that we have only certain equipment, there is so much preaching, there may be so much instructions. Just like karma, it's in their predestiny, they only do so much in regards to their suffering and enjoyment. Sometimes it appears that we as devotees, so it's not even saying more.
Explained that you get material suffering or enjoyment according to your material pious results or impious results, your fruit of reactions. But devotional service is not dependent upon that. Devotional service, in fact, can only come by your specific, determined effort to be Krishna conscious. Unless someone tries to be Krishna conscious, unless they make an effort, unless they have that desire at least, then they can't proceed. It's not that by just sticking it out in the material world after 10 million births you automatically get Krishna conscious. That's why it was described as nitya baddha, eternally conditioned. If we eternally never make any effort, never lift a finger to be Krishna conscious, we can stay here forever. The material universe is created, annihilated, created, annihilated, created, annihilated. And we are just one of the unlimited Bhatta Jivas, Nitya Bhattas, coming, going again, and never seeing the spiritual world, never realizing our spiritual existence. That's why it's described, Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeeva. Brahmanda means wandering, Brahmanda Brahmite means wandering from one Brahmanda, one Brahma universe to the next. So one Brahma universe, one entire 14 planetary system universe, as we know, it's totally encased by 10 layers of material energy. That means as long as we are in this universe, until we achieve liberation, nobody gets out, unless by chance you get liberated by Krishna's mercy. Apart from that, everyone is stuck for the entire lifetime of Lord Brahma in this universe. You can go up to Indraloka or go down to hell or whatever, but you're within this universe. At the end of his lifetime, when the material world is wound up, you go back in Mahavishnu. Then next time when there's a new Brahma, then you can go into a new universe. So when you decide, when this verse, the inner Sikh meaning of it, Brahmanda Brahmite, wandering from one universe to the next, means that we're in the material world sometimes for lifetimes of Lord Brahma. For total creations, not just kalpas, but entire lives of Lord Brahma, and wandering in this way for total creations of the material world, going back into Mahavishnu, then again recreate, going new universe and like this. How long we've been here? You can't put any time limit on it. So how long we are going to be here. But Brahmando Brahmite Kono Bhagyavanji, but some rare soul, by some great good fortune, we get the seed of devotional service. Brahmando Brahmite Kono Bhagyavanji, Guru Krishna, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Kono Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai. By their mercy, we get Bhakti Lota Beach. We get the seed of devotional service. That seed didn't come by karma, it came by the prasad, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So we get that seed, that's our pass. That's our ticket to get out of the material world. That's our means. But then we get the seed. We have to water the seed. We have to care for the plant. We have to, Lord Chaitanya described, we have to continue watering it until it grows and grows and crosses out of the material universe, goes beyond Shiva Dham, goes beyond the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, Vaikuntha, until it reaches the lotus feet of Radha Radha Kanta. There when it entwines around their lotus feet, and then flowers and fruits start to manifest. Fruits and flowers of prema, bhava. Then at that time, one has achieved the perfection. So just when we have the seed of devotional service, and maybe it's just starting to sprout, or it's just sprouted, or it's a little plant like that, even if it's, you know, 20, 30 feet up, it's got a long way to go. If somebody thinks that, all right, I got a 10-foot tree here, now I can just neglect on watering for a while, what's going to happen? Lord Chaitanya said, you're going to get so many weeds. 10 feet, what's 10 feet? You have to go not 10 miles, not 10 million miles. You have to go not even 10 million light years. You have to go right to the spiritual world. It took just to get to Vishnu Loka in this universe, it took Durvasa Muni 1 year at the speed of the mind. So what to speak of how many, if you want to put the distance on it. Of course, spiritually, you can reach it in one moment. Therefore, we have to spiritually water our creeper. Then it can grow very fast. If we neglect that, thinking ourselves to be advanced, then we even know how, no matter how big the creeper may be, it can be overcome by weeds. It can be chopped down by offenses.
until the creeper reaches Krishna's lotus feet. It's not, the battle's not over. Just like Chandaka said, that if there's a fire in the house, there's some things you have to deal with immediately. Fire in the house, disease in the body, death. So, that's the normal moral instructions. In this case, we have a spiritual disease. Just like I was walking in Calcutta and we were looking at some temple, old temple one man wanted to give. We went in this real back area, it was a gully. They call them gullies. This little Bhagavad-gita knows, it's like real horrible little shanty town kind of places. Sewer, open sewers and things. Somehow I was walking and there was a little path over the sewer and I just stepped on one big stone. And somehow the stone was loose and it swung up and my foot fell right in the open sewer which has things that you don't mention before the deities, and the stone just scraped my foot till blood came out. So that's got every, you know, if you wanted to get a culture of germ warfare or something, it was right there. So actually, immediately, within 2 hours, it was infected. Didn't even take any time. So by constant application of medication and different things and keeping bandage on it, it was almost cured. Just a little bit was left. But then I had to go to Bangladesh or something, and somehow I wasn't able to put a bandage. Just by going, say, for one day without putting it again, it came back another 50%. Just because it was still a little bit of infection, it wasn't fully cured, it could come back again. Then again, I had to put all the things, and then finally when it was totally gone, it's gone. So like that, disease means you have to totally finish it up. If you don't totally finish it, it can always come back again. So we have to not just think, well, I've been doing devotional service for 10 years now. We've been doing the material world for more than 10 creations. More than 10 lives of Brahma. Billions and billions. What's a 10 years of nothing? Or 15 years, or 20 years, or even a few 50 years. We are not here trying to get seniority on our pension plan or something. We're trying to completely purify the last trace of the disease. If in this lifetime we can completely eradicate every trace of material disease, then we can taste nectar right then. Even as we approach it, we'll be tasting nectar. And as soon as we're careless, it can come up again. Especially what if someone's only been practicing for a few decades. Then they become careless. In 1 second, if you completely surrender to Krishna, just like Dhruva Maharaj did, in 5 months he got realized Vishnu. Or like Kadvanga Maharaj, in one moment he totally surrendered. Doesn't take a long time if you totally eradicate the disease. Then from then on, once you get your Sarupu Palabdhi, you realize your Siddha Deho, you realize Krishna, you see simultaneously the material and spiritual worlds, you see the three modes, you're transcendental, you see Krishna constantly in your heart, you see Him everywhere, His transcendental form, Satchidananda Vigraha. When you have reached that state, then you don't have to worry about being careless or careful because you're already transcendental to the three modes. You can't act materially, it's totally out of your capacity. You see, spontaneously you'll be your nitya mukta. If you want to fall down, you have to do it by some specific intent. It won't be a spontaneous thing. In the material world, spontaneously the inclination is to be in Maya. But by specific intent, we're being Krishna conscious, and gradually we become purified until we come up to spontaneous devotional service. At that point, it's very natural
for us to remain in a Krishna conscious state. When we're totally purified, then we're liberated even while we're in this body. Even while we're practicing, we're liberated while in this body. But if we stop practicing, then we could again fall down. So therefore we have to be very careful. It's not that this is my nature to be fallen. That might be one's nature. It is everyone's nature to be fallen. For some people they may be more in the modes. But when a person gives up trying to become purified, then there's no glory there. If one's nature is to be fallen, but still he's trying, or she's trying, whoever it may be, is trying to be Krishna conscious, that's glorious. And for their effort, Krishna will bless them. The Vaishnava's mercy will be given. And when someone stops, throws in the towel. Just like this, Americans love these wrestling matches and boxing matches and everything. They have some big tournament and they're out there fighting, right? If one guy got a good boom punch in the belly, he said, people would practically, they'd spit on the guy. But when he goes out there and he gets his brain smashed in and his blood's coming down and he struggles to get up, 1, 2, 3, he somehow gets up, they're all cheering, right? There's some glory is there, even though the context is, even that's their Kshatriya kind of thing. Well, we're in a battle. Someone says, it's my nature to be fallen, my nature to be defeated. I can't do anything. Yes. No glory there. And even if a person says, it's my nature to be, but I know that by Krishna's mercy, by Guru's mercy, if I just stick it out, if I just try, if I somehow or another try to chant, if I somehow or another try to be Krishna conscious, if I just keep on the effort, even if I stumble and trip, if I get up and I just keep on trying somehow or another, that I can hope to get their mercy in the future. That's glorious. Krishna becomes attracted by such determination. That's what Vritrasura is saying here to Indra. Indra gets his thing knocked out of his hand. He thought, this is an embarrassment. What's the use of fighting, right? Vritrasura said, what's wrong with you? You're supposed to be the Indra Deva. You're supposed to know thing about transcendental science. Don't you know that Providence, Krishna, is the controller of everything? Whether you win or lose, that's not the point. The point is just to fight, just to do your devotional service. Pick up your thunderbolt, get back in the fray, get back in the fight. See, so someone's a devotee, they've taken initiation, they're surrendering to Krishna, they should know better. It's everyone's nature, and some people may be more because they may be more in the modes than others. They may have less spiritual asset. Still, there's only glorious is to keep on trying to be Krishna conscious. Once they've said too difficult, then they've admitted defeat. Then if somebody decided he doesn't want to leave the material world, then what can you do? Rupa Goswami said, if someone's made a determined decision that he wants to simply remain in material sense, in the material world, in material sense gratification, he said, then private discussion, small group discussion, or big public lecture, nothing's going to change that person around. They already decided. They may put up some defeatist attitude or put up some smoke screen. I don't like the devotees, personality problem, they do this, that. They'll put up some excuse so they can live with themselves. But the bottom line is what? They're not going off and then practicing devotional service by themselves because they don't like the devotees, so they're doing it by themselves. The first thing they go, they put on maybe a show for a few days, and they go right into sense gratification. Next time you see them, they're drinking or intoxicating or they're falling down or they're doing something else. Or they're just being absorbed in their material affairs. They're not able to maintain. They may criticize devotees this, devotees that. As soon as they leave association of devotees, who is able to maintain their devotional service at a very high level? Very rare. Very rare. Don't see it at all. Those who are inimical with devotees. So therefore, we should have to be careful against the mind, against these kind of obstacles. We're not in it for winning or losing, materially. Even if we go our whole life, if we are not able to, in our own consciousness, see Krishna face to face. But we just go on trying to be Krishna conscious. Even then Prabhupada says you can go, you know, even if you just try your whole life, you're guaranteed success. Just by trying. As soon as the person throws in the towel, says, I don't want to try anymore. The Prabhupada said, just like those geese flying, they fly down to Mississippi and to, then they fly back from Canada. Somebody along the way, someone doesn't want to fly anymore. What can the other geese do? Come on, come on. And one just plops down on the ground and some fox eats him. That's it, finished. Jackal food. So we're all heading back to Godhead.